Okay, we're back, Ellen, and we have a, dare I say, legendary guest in our midst. Not you, Walter. Sorry. Uh-huh. You're a nice guy, but you're not legendary.
He will be after today.
Okay. Ellen, yes. You want to introduce our guest?
Yes, I will. I want you to adjust Carolee's
headphones, yeah,
a little bit.
Too loud?
A little loud.
Okay.
Yeah. So, we're very pleased today to have Carolee Schneeman here.
Schneeman.
Yeah. Sorry.
That's okay.
Who's legendary and in many ways, and will be here for a screening of a film about her at the Second Ward Foundation, which leads me to Walter Sudol is here also, who's started the Second Ward Foundation on 3rd Street.
With his partner, Stephen Johnson.
That's right. So we're going to have a lot to talk about, I think. I just wanted to say that the name of the film is Breaking the Frame.
And you want to give the times and the place again?
And it's going to be on Saturday. The screening is going to be at Second Ward Foundation. It's preceded, though, by a reception at 7 o'clock. And then the screening, and then you're going to be signing some books?
Yeah, some catalogs from recent exhibits. But I want to make sure we say the name of the filmmaker is Marielle Nitoslavska. She's
well, better you say
Montreal.
It than us.
Exactly.
It's a good name. Right? Yeah.
I'm so glad you mentioned it, because I would stumble over that name.
It takes practice, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I remember you from the 60s and 70s and in the art world. And perhaps you could give us some of your background and how you started and
sure.
And what it led to.
Well, it's a very full puzzle. Certainly, I was always discouraged from the idea of what an artist was or that a girl could be one. So I'm here through pretty much sheer will and some very lucky configurations that didn't completely divert, minimize, or turn me into an unnatural monster. I grew up in the country where the most important thing that a kid could say to me would be, when we grow up, would you breed my children? So I knew the destiny of a cow was a proper focus, but in the meantime, I was always compelled to make images.
Was Bard the is that where you've finally discovered yourself as an artist, or was?
Well, partly. It was a mixed message all the way. Bard was wonderful because there was a dean who found me in high school in the countryside and gave me a full scholarship, room, board, tuition, wow. Because my dad would not fill out a financial statement. He didn't think a girl needed to go to college. So, yeah, Bard was a wonderful, wonderful art life saver, but at the same time, it was very discouraging.
Bard was
discouraging because my main painting teacher would say things like, you're very gifted for a girl, but don't set your heart on art. You're only a girl. So people forget the degree of cultural closure and repression. I wanted to write an English paper on Virginia Woolf. That had been a huge influence, just reading Woolf on my own. And I was told by the art, by the literature department, no, she's a trivializer. And then I discovered Beauvoir, and I had a wonderful professor from the South. And I told him I wanted to write about this Simone de Beauvoir. And he said, "Well, honey, why you want to write about the mistress? You could write about the master." So there you go.
So this early kind of flourishing of a feminist sensibility, is that partly what made you move from being a painter to more the performance arts? Because that was a better way to kind of connect with the issues you wanted to raise?
I wasn't so conscious of it in that way, because feminist history was going to come 10 years after I began performative work. It was actually more inspired by some of the somewhat older painters and sculptors who began to do live actions. So Oldenburg, Jim Dine, Robert Whitman. I began to see that the energy that was implicit in action painting could be extended into real time, and I wanted to try it.
So that that became your kind of basis for performance art?
Yeah, what's called performance art now. Yeah.
I remember when it was called Happenings.
That's right.
There were happenings.
Alan Capro, was that his name?
Yeah. That's right. Happenings. We had happenings, events, and actions. There was no concept of performance art. Also, we were not being supported by any cultural configuration.
So generally, your performances in the early period was part of a larger sort of happening. It wasn't just you on in a room performing.
No.
Is that
right? No,
there was
more like
all kinds of things going on, video and music.
Video came later, but I would edit sound and materials. You know, the Meat Joy in '64 incorporated fish, raw chickens. Lengths of sausage that were, I thought of as extensions of the physicality and the gestures of the body.
So your interest in the body, the female body in particular, of course, sort of underscored probably, to my mind, you know, the best known work, Interiors, which...
Meow!
What?
Interior Scroll.
Interior Scroll, sorry.
Yeah.
You thought I was being cat-like? But that wasn't the only thing that wasn't the only performance that involved the female body, right? I mean, a lot of them did.
Well, no, my work, like very early, was Fuses, the erotic film with my partner, James Tenney. There's a lot of male body featured in that and focused on as a kind of equity and interchange. Meat Joy is male and female bodies and also a lot of racial reconfiguration. It wasn't always white bread. Waterlight, Water Needle is a lyric work in the landscape on ropes harnessed between trees. So,
but I understand what you're saying, but you do know that Interior Scrolls did become kind of the iconic piece of
who would have thought? You know, it was just a little drawing. I did it only twice, and can you imagine how many jobs I lost because of that?
That's funny, because from our perspective now, I keep thinking about how many jobs you've probably gotten because of that.
No.
I know. That was my impulse at the same time.
Right. I mean, right. In the time, it was. Well, that leads me to another question about, you know, in these performances, and I'm not suggesting that they're all like interior scrolls, but there is that certain kind of shock value to the performances. At what point do you think, or do you think, that aspect of the work kind of diminishes in our time? Or does it?
What do you think? Is it diminishing?
I think so.
You think so? Okay.
I think it's very hard to appât the bourgeoisie anymore.
Oh, the appâté is all over the place. Yeah. It's everything that was ever taboo or suppressed is part of a commercial development, you know, and it's supported and it's usually vacuous. It's usually really... without any rigorous history or iconography attached to it.
Right. My own vacuity is exemplified by the fact that when I was 15, I was so excited to go see Charlotte Mormon, who I know was a friend of yours, the late Charlotte Mormon, perform. And I was 15, so you can imagine why I was excited. But that's part, I mean, that was, it reminds me of a line I read when Jack Nicholson said, you know, the real reason we liked art films in the 60s is because we got to see a lot of nudity.
Yeah. Yeah, there were bodies, but they weren't conventionalized. They were doing strange things.
Right.
Like dropping from balloons, covered in ice cubes.
Playing the cello.
Playing the cello. Pulling things out of parts of their body that we didn't know we should know about. Yeah.
So a lot of your work... Ellen, you want
to... I was going to say, is there anything that's new anymore? It seems to me when... artists start putting video and this and that together, they think they're creating a new kind of medium. And to me, I want to go and say, this has all happened before.
But political consciousness that has any real information and dimension is still new. That's still suppressed.
True.
Yeah. It's still diverted in our culture. And also our horrible assassination history, which we've never absorbed. You know, this country starts off murdering the native people and then building our important structures on slavery. And that's all in the unconscious in a discomforting dynamic right now.
Mm.
So I think artists are working with it.
So as a performance, here's another thing I've always wondered about performance art in general. It seems to me that the kind of, I know you've worked a lot with film as well. Is that an effort to preserve the actual performance? I mean, is that a conscious effort to preserve it? Or is performance art meant to be ephemeral and a one-off or a two-off or whatever?
Well, I don't think about it very in a calculated way. I wish I had. But when I began, we didn't have any money. And if somebody had a camera, you said, oh, can you come over this week and I'm going to do something and maybe we can have some images or video or a camera. And then it began to be invaluable because I was still, my aesthetic structure is still based on painting where you're alone mm-hmm. with this thing. You stare at it over and over again. You can go scrape it down and redo it and chop it up. But with my performative works, they're fleeting. They're ephemeral. I want to know what happened there.
You know, what made me think of it is when that, to me, an amazing moment in the Marina Abramović documentary when her gallerist, Sean Kelly, says, let's figure out how to monetize this.
Yeah, nobody ever said that to me. I'm still waiting.
Right, she was kind of like, yeah.
Yeah.
In this movie, this is not a premiere, right?
No, it did premiere 2 years ago.
In this movie, is there a lot of archival footage of your performative work?
Yes. It's the most intimate, psychically accurate history of my work that I could have ever imagined happening. I'm very thrilled with this work. I think it's intensive and coherent. It's not about promotion. It's really about the deeper strands of what makes work sustain itself, hopefully, where it comes from, and why it happened.
What kind of work do you do today?
I'm doing installation. I've been doing installation since the 60s. Mm-hmm. So I'm struggling to divert awareness of my work away from that same old body. You know, give me a break. I have the history of the Vietnam film, the Kinetic Theater, part of Angry Arts in the 60s. Against the war, you know, activist, and then all my studies of the Palestinian, the bombardments and destruction of Palestinian culture through the 80s, my least popular work in the world. No one wants to know about that. And right now, I'm preparing two wonderful simultaneous exhibits in New York City for October, a dual exhibit with the Lalonde Gallery and PPOW. And those will include relatively rarely seen installations, projection systems built with different kinds of motors and computer generation, all concerned with some aspect of physicality.
When you say the 80s work on Palestine wasn't much appreciated, you mean people didn't attend, people didn't buy something? Or I mean, well, how do you measure that?
I don't do work to sell it anyway.
Right.
It doesn't ever start there for me. And
right.
I don't really do work for an audience. I do it because something has to be developed in whatever materials I can find for realization. So I was very obsessed with the systematic destruction of normal Palestinian social structures. Mm-hmm. Month by month, everything was the library, the hospital, the fields, the olive orchards. Everything was being bombarded. And I called the Lebanese Tourist Bureau to see if I could get slides about Lebanese history and depiction. And they said, yes, coincidentally, we're closing our tourist bureau. There's too much destruction. You can come and have all our slides. So I was able to build an intensive projection system and text and a film in which you see houses being blown up and torn to pieces. They look like Malibu. Some of it's very beautiful. And then in some footage, you come to a house with a woman screaming and waving at the camera, and you see gradually that her house is only half there. Birds are flying through. It's blown up. So that work was interfered with. Let's just say there were social forces that interfered with it. So the mailing list disappeared. Work was stolen from it. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It was scary.
Mm.
So it wasn't so much people didn't attend or anything. It was subverted in some ways.
That's, yeah. Yeah.
I noticed that your work has gotten a lot of attention in other countries, in European countries and other. Do you think the attention that you got in foreign countries is different than here in the United States? Was it received better?
It's different.
Different.
I think it's different because of the long European cultural history of exceptional women. Like, that's part of the aesthetic conscious history. And that's tougher here. The really significant women artists have always had to struggle through a veil of marginalization or existing in our aesthetic consciousness because of their affiliation with important male artists. Whereas in Europe, it's not feminist as such. It's more a history of there are some remarkable artists who are female.
Reading about you and some of the work by you, I noticed a lot of references to Marx, Lacan, deconstruction, semiotics. I'm wondering, does that theoretical work feed your work? Do you find that you do what you do and then you find that that relates to it? Or do you actually get inspired by readings in theory?
No, I'm chopping it up. I'm throwing it out.
Okay.
And one of the things I say when I'm teaching to my class after discussing feminist principles is, would anyone here want to go to bed with Lacan? It's all lack for you girls. Absence, not male. No, I'm very inspired by the sort of tortured philosophical constructions and the absence of a vital, vibrant, sensuous approach to nature, to history, to sexuality.
Would that coincide with the famous notion of an erotics of art as opposed to a criticism of art that Susan Sontag once said?
Yeah, that could work. Yeah, I would jump around on that. Yeah.
Yeah, there's been a lot of debate about what that actually meant, you know, what she
yes,
meant, you
yes,
know.
Yes.
Because as much as she talked about it, she didn't really perform it in any way, you know, in her work.
Well, also it changes over time.
Mm.
So right now the larger erotic principles have been so degraded, so turned into just commercialized shock, joke.
Yeah, I mean, just think of a 15-year-old boy today wouldn't have to go see Charlotte Mormon to see nudity. He could go to his computer and see much grosser expressions of that kind of
absolutely
nudity.
Absolutely, yeah.
Well, Walter, you've been sitting here silently.
Yeah, do you mind if I ask Walter a couple questions?
I'd love
because
that.
I don't think our audience knows that Walter is, in fact, a major collector as well as the proprietor or whatever you want to call the
earphones here. I'll
have the earphones.
Walter of the Second Ward Foundation is also a collector at the foundation where they house a lot of their collection, and you're a major collector of Carolee's work.
Yes. That's correct.
You got to get closer, Walter.
That's correct. We started collecting Carolee in the 1990s, and we basically could have bought almost anything she made over the years. All available.
When you first said we started collecting Carolee, I thought you were like assembling body parts or something. But so tell, what do you actually collect when you collect Carolee?
We collect prints that are a representation of her performances. So one is called Up and up into including her limits, and it's Carolee swinging in a harness, drawing on paper. That's one print we have. We actually have a print of Interior Scroll, where she's performing Interior Scroll as well. We also no, it's a photograph that was taken by a photographer while Carolee was doing the performances. So it's a representation of the performance. So we also actually have footage from the original performance of Meet Joy, another performance called Body Collage. And all of those pieces are going to be on display this weekend at Second Ward Foundation.
Great. Oh, they'll actually be on display. Right.
Along with the screening of the film and the book signing, we'll have a couple galleries displaying some of Carolee's artwork.
Wow, that's wonderful.
And film.
So the reception begins at what time?
Reception begins at 7. The film starts at 7:30. It should be over at about 9, and then Carolee will be signing books
afterwards. What do you think of being collected in that sort of manner? I mean,
oh well, these are two wonderful, visionary, brave. I don't even want to call you guys collectors. It's maybe they're like the turkey vultures picking up the stuff that scares everybody else. They're knowledgeable. They're concerned. They do research. They're eloquent, and they have this. I don't know what to call it. It's kind of old-fashioned, brave, risky behavior. Nobody's taught them. They're not collecting by ear. You know, they're collecting by some vision that astonishes or provokes. They're very risky collectors. They take the stuff that other people don't want to bother with, and then very shortly thereafter, it becomes invaluable. So I'm so thrilled by our work and friendship. It's amazing.
Do you feel that there's something odd about video being collected, per se, and limited in some fashion? I mean, is it to preserve the so-called aura?
Well, I don't do that. My video isn't precious, and I don't do special editions, although my galleries are not happy about that. But my audience...
You should switch to Sean Kelly.
Well, we're all friendly. Yeah, right. No, my audience is students and researchers, and I want it to be available.
Right.
Yeah.
So you have no problem with the reproduction of various videos?
Oh, yeah, I do. I have a terrible problem with it. It's a nightmare. No, it's horrible. No, with appropriation, people can take things out of context, chop them up with horrible music on my silent work. No, it's a mess right now. It's a mess.
Walter, did you know the photographer Peter Moore, who took a lot of photographs during that happening era, I think? And his wife, Barbara Moore, had a gallery that handled a lot of that.
She doesn't have a gallery. It was private.
Oh, it was?
Yeah, always private.
Uh-huh.
Peter Moore was an incredible photographer. He was always there, quiet, like invisible, but covered in cameras, and he did the most remarkable imagery. And he gave us prints of works of Charlotte Moorman, of Twilight Tharp, my work, all the happenings people. But when he died, his wife really needed to control the finances, and it became strict in a way that most of us can't afford to pay for using the photographs.
Peter did an incredible series on when Penn Station, the old Penn Station, was coming down. Incredible photographs.
Yeah.
But I just thought you might know him. Well.
So are you in residence somewhere right now? I mean, not just living, but I mean working as an artist somewhere?
No, I'm just back from a major retrospective in Salzburg at the Museum of Modern Art there. Thank you for bringing it up. And it was two floors and about 350 works, from drawings to collage to installation, paintings. And for the second board, I've pulled out two very early landscapes.
Oh, wow.
For Walt and Steve, because I know they are happy to have them there.
So people really will see a representation of your entire career, not just...
pretty much, given the extensivity of Breaking the Frame, yeah.
Walter, how long will the exhibition be available to people?
One day.
Just that one day.
One day event.
That's it, Ellen.
Really?
You got to get
okay.
there then.
Yeah. I didn't know that.
Yes.
So what?
And Sunday, yeah. People can stop by at Sunday.
Oh, so Sunday as well. Saturday and Sunday.
So Saturday, what time could they come to see it?
7 o'clock.
7 o'clock. Okay. It's an evening event.
Yes, correct.
And Sunday?
Sunday.
By invitation only?
Invitation.
Okay. All right.
We'll be around on Sunday.
We will.
Okay. Because I think people might want to spend a little time with it. It sounds.
We hope so. I did want to mention, because you do a lot with the history of experimental music, that the only sound in the film documenting my life and work is by James Tenney, my original partner. That is the only sound there. And again, it's not programmatic, but it occurs sort of organically and disappears. And so it's all by James Tenney.
Sounds incredible.
Yeah, I can't wait. I'm going.
Good. Yay.
Do we have a date, Ellen?
We might have. We'll see.
So once again, it's Saturday night at 7 o'clock. You go there, reception, look at the works on display, 7:30 the movie begins. And the name of the movie again, Ellen?
Breaking the Frame.
And Ellen, who is the director?
Breaking the Frame.
I want you to say the name.
I'd have to shuffle my papers here to find it.
Oh, maybe Carol Lee will help you.
Marielle.
Nitoslavska.
Nitoslavska.
And how long has she been involved and interested in your work?
It's been 7 years. She worked on this for
seven
years.
Oh, films?
Yeah. She had access to all my films, my diaries, and she followed my exhibits. She has a beautiful section on Wham, the feminist history exhibit in L.A. That's a remarkable sequence, so... Yeah, it's full of surprises.
What do you think about feminist discourse these days?
Well, it's quite chaotic, don't you think? It's all over the place.
It is.
It's hard to...
Chaos can be good, though, right?
Is what?
Chaos can be good, though, right?
Chaos?
Yeah.
Chaotic.
Well, there we are. Now we're back to the crows picking and grabbing at things that shine or are embedded in other kinds of materials.
I see.
It just takes a lot of concentration to try to sort it out. So I'm not in residence, except I'll say I'm home, where I've lived all my life in this old farmhouse, north of New Paltz, the other side of the river from here. And it's where Fuses was filmed and Meet Joy Imagined, and I'm still there.
Yeah. Great. Thank you so much for coming in and talking with us today.
Yeah, it's really a pleasure, a joy.
Thank you. What a pleasure for me. Yeah, wonderful.
You too, Walter, even though I see you all the time.
Yeah, bravo, Walter. Yeah.
And thank you for what lies ahead on Saturday night. Sounds great.
We've been talking with Carol Lee Schneeman and Walter Sudol.
Help, I'm all tangled up.
In recognition of the movie that will be shown Saturday night at 7:30. You can get there at 7 for the reception at the Second Ward Foundation on North 3rd Street. I was going to say 71 North 3rd. It's the old schoolhouse there. It's been transformed into an exhibition space, among other things. And afterwards, Carol Lee will sign books of catalogs of her recent exhibits, and you get to talk to her. Mm-hmm.